Isaiah chapter 35, verses 4 through 7a, car. This is the Old Testament reading for Pentecost 15, Series B, due on September 9, 2012. Isaiah 35, 4 through 7a, this text is one small piece of a more comprehensive picture. Isaiah 34 calls the nations and peoples to hear the pronouncement of Yahweh's judgment against all the nations, but a judgment that focuses on Edom, one of the persistent enemies of Israel and Judah. The defeat or destruction of Edom entails deliverance for Zion, 34:8, but also for the wilderness, dry land, and desert, 35 verse 1. Can there be a connection? Might there be a connection between restoration of creation and resurrection of the body? The promise of deliverance, restoration, is a message that needs to be repeated, and that's where the appointed reading comes in. Already in verse 3, there went out the call to strengthen weak hands and firm up wobbly knees to encourage them. Now also comes the charge in verse 4, Imru Lanim Hore Lev Chizku Al Tirau Hine Elohekem Nakam Yavo Gmul Elohim Hu Yavo Vyoshekem. Say to the hasty of heart, be strong. Do not be afraid. Behold, your God. Vengefully he is coming. The recompense of God, he or it is coming in order that he may save you. The nim hare is a niphal participle, masculine plural, in construct. The root has to do with being hasty or fast. Here it is like hearts that are beating fast because of fear. Well, we might say that they are having some sort of palpitations. Chizku, a kal imperative, masculine plural. In verse 3, there was a pael imperative, make strong. The word nakam, vengeance, here perhaps more adverbially, with vengeance or vengefully. On the verb form yavo, kal imperative, that's easy enough. The still incompletely resolved question for the Hebrew verb system is whether it is tense-based or aspect-based. So is this he will come as of a still undetermined future time? Or he is coming, emphasizing that Yahweh already is doing the action of entering this world's stage. Somehow the prophet sees, in external events, something taking place that signifies for him the saving work of Yahweh in behalf of his people. This actually can be important for us. Do we reckon only that God will someday intervene for us? Or do we perceive him doing so even now, though perhaps in less obvious or apparent ways? How does God use the ordinary stuff of the world to work his will, whether for judgment or deliverance, or even for things in between, like warning and encouragement? The construct chain, Gemul Elohim, recompense, or the recompense of God, one wonders whether recompense needs to be understood as an action and its effect, or potentially as a person. And the hifil imperfect, vayoshakem, with the second plural masculine object suffix, rendering that as modal, so that he may or he will save you. Verse 5. Az tipachachna enei irim, v'oznei cherashim tipachna. Az Yedaleg K'ail Piseach Vataron Lashon Elaim. Read the two then clauses. In verse 5, then, which could be temporal or logical, then as in what happens next, then in a more logical kind of sense, as a function of the condition of the things that have been described, that those things prevail, entails or brings along the things that are described now. First of all, then, the eyes of the blind will be opened. A niphal, imperfect, and somewhat unusual, third, plural, feminine. Don't get many forms like that. And the ears of the deaf will be opened. Same verb form. And then continuing with the then clauses or phrases in verse 6, then the lame will leap for joy, and the tongue of that is bound, basically a construct chain there, lashon elaim, but here using bound more, you know, the tongue of boundness. The bound tongue, the one that cannot speak or move, will sing as for joy. And the balance of verse 6, Ki niv k'u bamidbar mayim v'nachalim ba'arba, for waters will erupt, split, you know, in the wilderness, and streams in the desert, the Arava. Finally, the first half of verse 7, V'hiya ha-sharav la'agam, v'tzim'on le'mabu'e mayim. And the dry or parched ground will become like a pool or a marsh, agam, and the thirsty ground, tzim'on, like springs of, will become springs of waters, or of water. There would seem to, we recognize in verses 5 and 6, the blind and deaf and leap, the lame and the mute or the dumb, their transformation. These are signs that they, that the blind see and the deaf hear and so forth, are signs of the Messianic age. In the last part of the pericope for the particular Sunday, sort of a recovery of the land, that dry land becomes sort of progressively moister. There almost seems to be a progression. It depends on how one renders agam, as pool or pond, something that is more oasis-like, or potentially a marsh, and the thirsty ground like springs of water. And the balance of verse 7 talks about grass becoming like reeds and rushes, which may also be sort of a suggestion of increased fertility of the land. There is some connectivity between this reading and the gospel, in which Jesus heals a deaf man. And in the optional piece for the gospel from Mark, delivers the Syrophoenician woman's daughter from some kind of unclean spirit. The epistle from James 2 condemns partiality and urges generous treatment toward all as an entailment of a true faith. more to the point of this reading, what are we afraid of? Say to those who have an anxious heart, who have palpitations, be strong, don't be afraid. One of the things that might make this text difficult to preach in an American context is that we, Americans, don't seem to be afraid of anything. At least, we're not likely to admit it. In the 2 weeks just before this text will be an option for preaching, both major American political parties will have held their national conventions. There will be no more presumptives. Already, of course, the presumptive nominees of their respective parties are campaigning, so it's hard to imagine how things will be different after the conventions. At any rate, no political candidate can dare to say he's afraid. They're afraid to. It would be a major event if a candidate for some significant office would have the gumption to say, I am afraid for the long-term survival of our nation or state or city. I am afraid for our survival because we have lost, abandoned, or sacrificed our national, state, or city conscience. But that's the kind of historical location in which Isaiah preaches. Judah and Jerusalem, the nation and the city, face an assortment of threats, of which they seem to be less rather than more aware. But the real crisis is a crisis of conscience, which in the biblical context always is a consequence of a crisis of faith, either faith in a wrong God or a wrong kind of faith in Yahweh, the true God. Some in Judah and Jerusalem, however, a remnant, were afraid. They knew their nation possessed a twisted conscience and a perverted faith. It is to them that the prophet is speaking here. Yes, he says, God is coming with a vengeance, but his recompense is coming in order to save. And they, the remnant, will get it. They will see and hear and leap and sing. They will understand. We probably have a tendency to view these signs of the Messianic age in two ways. One is the physical healing of the blind, deaf, lame, and mute, which we see carried out in the miracles that Jesus performs in the Gospels. The other is that we assign spiritual values. The spiritually blind, deaf, lame, and mute are those who do not believe. And in the coming of God, the unbelieving will become believing. I'd like to suggest a third way, which embraces both. It is an insight that must be the believing or blind seeing, deaf hearing, and so forth. These are insights that must be, or healings that must be divinely granted and yet also humanly perceived or understood, that when God acts with a vengeance, he also saves, that in, with, and under an act of judgment, God delivers and redeems and saves. After all, it was in, with, and under God's action of vengeance and recompense against sin that he redeemed and saved us and all people. The Father unleashed his full wrath against sin and its perpetrator, humanity, by unleashing it against his own Son, whom he loves. To see and perceive, to hear and understand, both phrases that draw from Isaiah's call narrative in Isaiah chapter 6, and understanding, then to leap and sing for joy, to see the gospel performed in, with, and under the invocation of the law and its curse. This is why the prophet can say to those with anxious hearts, be strong, don't be afraid. I will admit that I am afraid for the long-term survival of the United States because the national conscience shows too many signs of being blind, deaf, lame, and mute about what is right because it worships at an altar of rights. I am afraid mainly of the kind of U.S. in which my grandsons will become adults in the next 12 to 15 years. I have to teach them, as the prophet teaches us, to be strong and not to be afraid, because even in the turmoil of our world, God is present, working his will for the salvation of those who trust in him.